Cale Clark here. Thanks for listening to my podcast. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Relevant Radio and get a free phone. Don't delay. CharityMobile.com. That's CharityMobile.com.
Fascinating facts, candid conversations, and some levity to lighten your day. This is the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
A wonderful Wednesday to you. So glad to have you with me today. It is July the 27th, and you can call in right now to grab a line, grab a vine on the Cale Clark Show. 888-914-9149 is the number to call. Once again, 888-914-9149. You can also email the show, and the address is Cale, C-A-L-E, at relevantradio.com. You can follow me on Twitter also, at Cale Clark, C-A-L-E, Clark with an E, and the show account is at Cale Clark Show. Lots to talk about today. Lots of fun stuff coming up later. It's the 35th anniversary, if you will, of Rick Rolling. Hopefully no one will do that to us today. And also, we're going to kind of delve into this question of, was Jesus really a priest? Now, we know, of course, he's our great high priest, but some people question, did Jesus really do priestly things? Well, we're going to give you five reasons to believe that he did. And speaking of priests, I'm joined right now by a bishop, not just a priest, but a bishop. He is the Bishop of Sault Ste. Marie, Ontario, and he has been kind of in this traveling caravan with Pope Francis across Canada. It's the first time that a pope has been to North America since 2008. And we know that the reason why Pope Francis is here right now is that he has apologized, which he did on Monday, for ways in which the members of the Catholic Church participated in really what was known to be a system of, in many ways, cultural destruction, forced assimilation of indigenous peoples. The Pope called this catastrophic, and he formally apologized for what he called the colonizing mentality that oppressed indigenous peoples, took them away from their families, and there were so many devastating impacts of this throughout generations. And here's what the Holy Father said. I'm going to quote him here. He said, quote, "I am sorry. I ask for forgiveness in particular for the ways in which many members of the church and of religious communities cooperated, not least through their indifference, in projects of cultural destruction and forced assimilation promoted by the governments of that time, which culminated in the system of residential schools," end of quote. So joining me now from Quebec City is Bishop Thomas Dowd. Bishop, thank you for taking the time today. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here, and greetings to all your listeners.
Fantastic. And you're well-versed with the media. In fact, we'll get into this a little bit later. You were one of the first priests to have a blog that I know of. So we'll talk.
The first in Canada. There were about five others in the States prior to that.
All right. Well, hey, you're in the top five, the first five at least anyways. And so you've been with Pope Francis, of course, on this journey, his apostolic visit here to Canada. And just before we get into the subject matter, what he was here to do and talk about, how has the Holy Father looked to you? You've been up close, and he's obviously, we've seen pictures of him in a wheelchair. He's got a bad knee. He's not a spring chicken anymore. He's 85 years old. How is the Holy Father looking to you, Bishop Dowd?
Yeah, he definitely is very present to every event. I've seen him at four events so far. Mm-hmm. I mean, he takes his time, as you say. He's got a bad knee, and so he's not jumping around the place, that's for sure. Mm-hmm. But he's fully there. He's fully present. He really wants to. He's really making the effort. He's pacing himself in this visit, mm-hmm. you know, in order to be fully present. I got to tell you, here in Canada, you know, the Pope canceled a number of apostolic voyages or postponed them. Mm-hmm. And the Canadian one, though, he really was committed to coming. And so we're very grateful that he's here. And I think it speaks volumes that, you know, despite whatever impairments he may have physically and even advice from doctors saying take it easy, he really was committed to coming. So we're very grateful for that.
Well, let me ask you this, Your Excellency. Why do you think he was so committed? And as you rightly note, he has canceled several other trips that were planned around this time, like one to the Sudan he canceled. But this was really important to him to come here personally. Why do you think that was?
From the beginning, Pope Francis has talked about the importance of what he called the peripheries. You know, and the periphery can be a geographic thing. It could also be an existential thing. And I think for the Pope, the whole question of indigenous peoples certainly appeals to that side of his own spirituality and his own mission focus that, you know, he's given to himself and he's shared with us. And so it's a great fit, you know, it just seems obvious as soon as you say it. And certainly when you look at the situation of indigenous peoples in Canada, there is a reality of periphery in many, many situations. Some, you know, like even the territory that is set aside, you might say, within Canada, they're called reserves, you know, so it's designated territory, which is, you know, not always, it's on the beaten track, so to speak, you know, and so the whole question of geographic periphery within Canada is certainly very real, and existential periphery, you know, this is the Pope who, you know, from the beginning would spontaneously go to those in the crowd, for example, whom he perceived as suffering. And so he likes to be close to people in that way. So I think I would say that's likely the motivating factor. It certainly fits with the themes of his papacy.
You're listening to the K.O. Clark Show on Relevant Radio. My guest is Bishop Thomas Dowd of Sault Ste. Marie, Ontario, who's been with the contingent of bishops and lay people, as well as some deacons, some religious that are kind of traveling with Pope Francis, part of the entourage, on his visit to Canada. And let me ask you, Bishop Dowd, about the apology that he made on Monday. How was that received? Like, you were there, you were on the ground. How do you think that was received by Indigenous peoples there?
Well, you know, St. Thomas Aquinas said, everything is received according to the mode of the recipient. I don't mean to get all philosophical on the radio
okay,
all of a sudden.
That's all right.
But you know, going into this, even the Indigenous leaders with whom we've been partnering, they've never said that, you know, there's going to be a statement that will suddenly make everything, you know, magically better or something like that. That this is a part of a process, it's part of a journey. And so for when the Pope offered his apology with very clear words, "I am sorry," there was spontaneous and loud applause in the crowd. Spontaneous and loud applause. On the other hand, when one of the Indigenous leaders offered a gesture of reconciliation by placing an eagle bonnet on the Pope's head, there was a woman in the crowd who protested. And so there will be varying reactions. Like I say, everything is received according to the mode of the recipient. And so we need to remember, though, that people of goodwill, you know, in our Catholic lingo, or the way we speak, we always refer to partnership with people of goodwill. And where there is goodwill, I think people will see the goodwill in the Pope's coming here and in the desire to truly achieve reconciliation. And so that's personally what I'm counting on.
Okay, that's good to hear that. There were some reports that came out today in the Toronto Star that some well-known First Nations leaders have said this is not good enough. What the Pope has apologized, the way in which he's apologized so far has not been what we've asked for. There's this famous Truth and Reconciliation Commission that took place, and I think it was in 2015, they said that they wanted an apology that specifically said the institutional church is to blame for this. And he kind of did not exactly say that in his apology. Do you think there's merit in what they're asking for? Should he have gone farther in his apology?
I'm not familiar with the statements that you're referring to. To be honest, I've been traveling all day. So
fair enough.
You know, in terms of, I'm not quite sure what's being asked for. I mean, the expression of sorrow. I mean, you know, the last residential schools run by the church closed 60 years ago. And so we are trying to find a way to allow people, first of all, to know they've been heard in the hurts that they've experienced. And also that there is a commitment within the church to not ever go there again. You know, that's a big part of, you know, if we think of the sacrament of reconciliation, you know, you can't go to confession without acknowledging you, you're going to do your best not to do it again. You know, that's a key component of reconciliation, the key component of contrition. And so I don't know that there are any sort of, you know, magic words that can be said. How would one even negotiate that? And again, this is not going to be a one-shot deal. This will be a process.
Yeah, and that's...
I hope that, again, if people are sincere and of goodwill, I think we're going to be able to move forward.
My guest is Bishop Thomas Dowd. You're listening to the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. And Your Excellency, there have been a lot of people who have suggested, sort of on the other side of the equation, that the Pope should not have apologized at all, that this is all in the past. Some have said we just simply need to move on. What would you say to people who hold that view?
Yeah, I disagree with that view. You know, there were similar things being expressed to Pope John Paul II in the run-up to the Great Jubilee of the year 2000.
Mm-hmm.
But John Paul had wanted to, Pope John Paul, now Saint John Paul II, had wanted to do this process of what he called a purification of memory in order to take a look at the past and acknowledge it. And I think that is something, you know, unfortunately, one thing we see in human dynamics is a carrying forward of grievances that can even cross generations.
Yeah.
And so if the grievance is there, how do we address the grievance? You know, there's no question we cannot lay the blame for actual sins at the feet of someone else. But sometimes it's important for us to express our solidarity with those who suffer, and beyond that, to express that we don't place ourselves in historical solidarity with things that have happened that are evil. You know, my mother is of German descent. She was born in 1940. She had nothing to do with the Second World War or the Holocaust. And yet, being a person of German descent myself, I was raised to make sure that we knew our history and that we sensed we had a responsibility to acknowledge that history and to be partners in making sure something like that would never happen again. So there can be a historical weight that comes from generation to generation, but it's not meant to be laying a guilt trip on future generations. It's meant to be calling us to action in a positive way. That's how I've seen it. That's how I've lived it growing up, and that's how I see this situation.
Well, Bishop Dowd, you've also taught in the past sacramental theology, and one of the things that you said to me on the phone the other day, we were talking about this, was that when we go to confession, when we experience forgiveness sacramentally, it happens in a moment, but it's really not just a moment. It's not that cut and dry when it comes to this whole process of reconciliation, is it? Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, well, the example that we used when we were speaking and I've used with others is, you know, when we think of going to confession, which we call the sacrament of reconciliation, another name for it, I mean, the process is quite extraordinary if you think about it. You acknowledge your sins. You do an examination of conscience. You can go to an individual who you don't know and most likely doesn't know you, can even be anonymous behind a screen. You confess your sins. You don't have to get into a lot of detail about it, just the number and kind. If you want to limit it to that, that's fine. You're given a few words of advice on how to do better. You're given a penance to do, which usually is quite light and, you know, certainly not in proportion to the sins we might have done. And then we receive absolution and we're reconciled to God and to the church. And we don't ever have to bring it up again. In fact, if we did bring it up again, people might wonder if we're suffering from scruples. And so, you know, that we're used to, or we're familiar with, this tremendous generosity of forgiveness. If you consider the sacrament, the way it's structured, there's a generosity of forgiveness that's extraordinary. But we can't take for granted, that's how God will work in the sacrament, but it would be an error to take for granted that is, you know, suddenly how reconciliation is going to necessarily work sort of in the day-to-day.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus has given us a tremendous offer of mercy in the sacrament, but he's also calling us to be agents of mercy in our world and to recognize that, you know, when there's healing that needs to happen, well, it's very hard to rush healing. And so I've used the example, you know, suppose you have a couple and one of them goes on a business trip, married couple, one of them goes on a business trip and has an affair with a colleague while they're on a business trip. You know, it's just a one night thing, you know, the spouse gets home, feels terrible about it, immediately confesses to their spouse and causes a lot of pain. They work through it and, you know, they put it behind them, but then finds out a few months later, they have to go on another business trip with the same colleague. You know, are they going to tell their spouse before they leave? Well, they better, you know, because if you don't, it's going to create all kinds of worries. But if you do, on the other hand, it may raise up old hurts. An apology might need to be repeated, might have to work through things again. And there's nothing abnormal about that. And if a person was to say, well, look, I already apologized once. Why are you all upset? You missed the whole point, you
exactly.
know. That kind of reaction is a sign that you don't get it. And so there's a human dimension to reconciliation, you know, in this life that we need to understand and respect that dynamic. And I think that's a lot of what we're seeing here.
I appreciate that perspective. You're listening to the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. My guest is Bishop Thomas Dowd. Bishop Dowd, can you just hold tight with me just for a minute? We just have to take a quick break here on the network, but I've got some more important things I wanted to ask you. Can you hang tight with us for a minute?
No problem.
Okay, perfect. We'll be right back with Bishop Thomas Dowd on the Cale Clark Show right after this. 888-914-9149 is the number to call. Hi, this is Cale Clark. Thanks for listening to my podcast. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. They're a pro-life phone company and 5% of your monthly plan price goes to Relevant Radio or another pro-life charity of your choice. For a limited time, new customers who mention offer code Relevant Radio get a free phone with free activation and free shipping. Don't delay. CharityMobile.com. That's CharityMobile.com. The Catholic Order of Foresters, the sponsor of our studio's line, is hiring today. Several positions are available throughout the United States. Visit relevantradio.com/forester to learn more about how you can find your vocation with Catholic Order of Foresters, an Illinois Life Insurance Society, not licensed in all states.
Helping you keep your mind off traffic and on the more important things in life. It's Cale Clark on Relevant Radio.
Hey, welcome back to the show. 888-914-9149 is the number to call. I'm having a great conversation with Bishop Thomas Dowd, who just checked in to his hotel in a secret location, maybe, in Quebec City. He's with the Pope. He's with Pope Francis as he's traveling across Canada on what the Pope called a penitential pilgrimage. And one of the things about Bishop Dowd that everybody should know, who's the Bishop of Sault Ste. Marie, Ontario, before that, he was an auxiliary bishop, an assistant bishop in Montreal for a time, and he's really good with media and understands the importance of media for the church's evangelistic mission. And as we said off the top, Bishop Dowd, you weren't the first, but you were the first Canadian to be a blogging priest. How'd you get into that, and what drove you to it?
That was in 2003, but before I went into the seminary, I worked in the telecom industry. I worked for a Swedish telecom company called Ericsson.
Oh,
and
yes.
So
yeah.
I remember when this newfangled thing called the World Wide Web was just getting started. The first company where you could order something online was Pizza Hut. You could order a pizza, believe it or not, through a web page. And so in 1995, the Canadian bishops became the first bishops' conference in the world with a web page. That was the days when if you created a web page, you could have a press release and get an article in the newspaper, believe it or not. So we were the first ones in the world, and yours truly was the webmaster. I wasn't even a seminarian. I was still working in business at that point. So I've been very close to the whole question of this. My dad was a ham radio operator, which, you know, shortwave radio, amateur radio, that was the internet of its day, the ability to reach across the world and connect with people. So, you know, even as a kid, we would build radios together. So I've been around electronics, computers, communications from a very young age. And so Or can I say I come by it naturally, I guess.
Yeah, came by it naturally, absolutely. Well, I learned something new. I did not know the first website was used by Pizza Hut, but it's kind of funny that you said that, because just the other day we were talking about Bitcoin on the show and how for a lot of people, Bitcoin has become almost a religion, and it even has its own holy day or holiday, and it was the first time that Bitcoin was used in a transaction. It was to buy pizza, so everybody who's into Bitcoin celebrates that as well. Well, What's your take right now, Bishop Dowd, on how the church is doing with media in general? I know it's kind of a broad question, but there are pockets, I'm sure, where it's doing better than others. But media, and especially new media, how is the church using that to evangelize what Pope Benedict called the digital continent?
Yeah, I think we're still learning, honestly, how to use the new media. I mean, for me, with blogging, you know, blogging was the original social media in many ways, you know, because you could write something, people could leave comments, and you could have conversations. And so, and bloggers would cross post each other's stuff. They would refer to each other's stuff. So there was even a term for it, the blogosphere. And so it was the origin in many ways of what Facebook and Twitter and other things did. Twitter was really just a microblogging platform initially.
Yep.
And so what I saw, the magic of it when we were starting, was it was a way for people to engage in conversation with each other. And it was a way to really, in some ways, build community. And so there was something very ecclesial about that, you know, that you could have this communion across space in, you know, through the power of the medium. So for me, the goal, like, you can have media that is sort of unidirectional, that, you know, you are transmitting and other people will receive and that's about it. But the idea of being able to engage in a complex conversation, you know, for your average company, they have a hard time with that because, you know, sometimes they'll put up a web page or a Facebook page, but then they find themselves having to curate all kinds of comments and it takes resources and, you know, it's just,
exactly
what they're trying to do is push a product. They're trying to do advertising, basically.
Yeah.
And so, and people through these media have become very sensitive to efforts at manipulation, and they don't like it, and they pick up on it right away. And so I think for us, I would challenge, I remember I raised this years ago, and I put it out there, I challenged the Pope to name a bishop for the internet, maybe a few of them, you know, that if you're going to have a digital continent, let's have a bishop named to work in that continent, or more than one, you know, based on linguistic background. That would be my proposal. If I was Pope, that's what I'd do. I am not. I'm not after his job, but if I was Pope, that's what I'd do.
Very interesting. Yeah, name a bishop for the digital continent. That's provocative and really, in a good sense, thought-provoking. My guest is Bishop Thomas Dowd, a pioneer as a blogging priest and the current bishop of Sault Ste. Marie, Ontario, traveling with Pope Francis across Canada right now. And obviously the Pope himself has a Twitter account, at Pontifex. It kind of gets passed on from Pope to Pope. And let me ask you this, based on what he has said, and he's got a lot of, obviously in his preaching, he's very arresting in a lot of his imagery and things that he says from time to time. Has there been anything in his remarks so far on this trip, any phrases, any particular speeches that have stood out to you? And if so, what did he say that really grabbed your attention so far?
Well, I think it's more the strength of his words. The Pope has been speaking in Spanish, and so
we've been
accessing his words through translation. And, you know, translation, it's good that it's there. I know a bit of Spanish, and so I listen very carefully when he's speaking in Spanish in order to get a sense of the emphasis of his words. And there are sometimes expressions that are stronger in an original language. Like I'm from Quebec originally, so I'm fluent in French, and I'll hear people speak in French and then I'll hear a translation and I'll go, that's not quite it. And so, you know, for the Pope, I think one thing we're going to have to do here in Canada is take his words that he said in Spanish and make that sort of the official text of his talks to us, his words for us, and then help bring out you know, the deep meaning. For example, you know, he used a word in Spanish that could be translated in English as terrible or awful, you know, to describe the conditions in residential schools. But, you know, the word he used, I believe it was nefaste, you know, it means from the Latin, it's about the strongest word you can have to describe something as awful, you know? And so he's trying to get at the heart of the negative dimension in order to acknowledge it in its depths, a bit like, you know, Christ did when he took on our sin. You know, it's, he's truly adopting and bringing out and acknowledging the depths of that, you know, that mystery of evil.
Yeah.
But again, in order to show a redemptive light through reconciliation, through the request for it, and through healing.
My guest is Bishop Thomas Dowd. You're listening to the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. And that's, I mean, speaking to the heart and not sort of blinking at the reality of the horrific evils that took place in some of these residential schools. I think, I don't know if you'd agree with this, but I really do think that sunlight is the best disinfectant, that you really have to do that. You really have to confront what's taken place in order to kind of excise the cancer that's there. And I would just, obviously a lot of people have struggled with and have outright rejected Catholicism because of things like this, the sins of some of her members, not all, of course. But what would you say to people? I mean, obviously these events are not exactly motives of credibility for the faith. And even though they may not have happened in our time, they did happen. What would you say to somebody who is tempted to just throw the baby out with the bathwater and reject the faith altogether because of this sort of thing? What would you say to them?
Yeah, well, I'll be honest. It's something I struggle with too. You know, maybe odd to hear a bishop say that, but in Montreal, where I was before, I wound up being very involved in an investigation of a priest who had, he was now in prison. And we all know what he'd be in prison for, you know, and it was very, very challenging to the soul. It's these sorts of things are corrosive to the human spirit. And for me, you know, there, it came down to realizing, you know, St. Peter was right. Lord, where would we go? You have the words of eternal life. And there's just no alternative to Jesus, you know. The part of the problem is if I can understand the desire to take distance with what we perceive as evil, because who wants to be around that? I get that. But is the power of Christ, can we really put that at Christ's feet? I don't think that's fair. He's the Lord. And so in the end, I think the real test becomes, you know, is our, what is the faith that we have? And, you know, when we talk about having that personal relationship with Christ and the importance of it, those are not hollow words. As, you know, from my own experience, you know, the real test for me was for me to be able to, on a day-to-day basis, recommit myself to that relationship with Christ. Not just as Lord, Lord, but to hear him turn back to me and say, I call you friend. And, you know, it was, that's been part of my journey personally. I don't blame anyone who's on a different place in their journey. But as you say, it comes down to, is Jesus still Jesus? And if he is, how do we stay close to him? I could never walk away from the Eucharist, for example, never. It's him. And so... Yeah. To have that profound relationship with him in prayer and in the sacraments and in just the living tradition of our church. I also don't think we can judge our history only by its sinners. Sinners you can find anywhere.
Yeah.
There, you know, I mean, that's the universal reality. We have to look at our saints as well, and we do have an extraordinary history of saints.
And that's a very good point. My guest is Bishop Thomas Dowd, Bishop of Sault Ste. Marie, Ontario. And it's so true that in so many ways, I think it was Chesterton who said that sinners are also dreadfully similar, but the saints are so different. And you look at the saints, of people who actually are, I mean, obviously these situations are cases of people who clearly are rejecting the teaching of Jesus Christ and not obeying it, not believing it. We need to look at the people who are living it out, people like Mother Teresa and other great saints. They're just so unique and so, you just don't, I don't want to make a broad generalization here, but you don't find people like that too often outside of the Catholic Church. You might find a few here and there, but just the concentration of these remarkable lives, you just don't see that anywhere else, do you, Bishop?
It is truly exceptional. And for those of us who have met a living saint, I can tell you, it just a conversation is transformative. I went to India years ago, and I met a Jesuit who was over 90. He was still pastor of a parish that he had founded.
Wow.
He had offered his resignation at 75, and the bishop never got around to accepting it, so he was still the pastor. He went there and accepted voluntary poverty. And when I say poverty, I mean to live the conditions of the poor in that area. He got to that part of India where the Christian population, I'm told, was basically zero when he arrived. And I met him, and at the time that I met him a few years ago, there were 28,000 Catholics, half of whom could trace the origin of their Christianity to his ministry.
Wow.
And so, and while we were there, the poor man had had a fall, you know, 9 years old or so. He still had to use, he was still using an outhouse. You know, he was trying to live the spirit of poverty of the people. And so they said to him, look, Father, you're 90. You have to walk in the dark if you get up in the middle of the night. Can we at least build a bathroom attached to your house? And his spontaneous answer was, if the poor don't have it, I don't want it. Living authenticity. It was incredible. And if I ever go back to India, I'm going to visit his tomb. I'm going to pray at his tomb. I pray for his intercession. He was an amazing guy. And he died a month after I met him. No connection, but I just feel so privileged to have met him. And it's transformative.
And there's so many saints that we don't know. I mean, we talk about the canonized saints, but of course we have All Saints Day I call it the Saints Day for the rest of us, because there's so many stories like his that people have never heard throughout the centuries and even in our own time. And wow, that's such a great example of an incarnational faith and ministry to say, if the poor don't have it, I don't want it. That's amazing. And talk about spiritual fatherhood too. My goodness, so many people can trace the birth of their faith back to him. That's just an outstanding example of all the good that can come from the gospel and from this message. Well, I know you're probably tired, Bishop, from your journey, but I got to ask you this. What is the next step for Pope Francis on this trip? Where is he going next, and what's the plan going forward?
Yeah, he is in Quebec City. I am in Quebec City now. I left Edmonton this morning and flew here. I'm not actually on the same plane as the Pope, so but we do have number of rooms reserved for bishops who are going to be taking part in the events. And I wanted to be here to be able to show my people in my diocese that I'm part of this event, and I'm kind of bringing them along with me. That's why I've been posting a lot on social media as I go, because I want to give them a feel that they're here as well, even if they couldn't be physically present. So he will be here tomorrow, and then he leaves for the north of Canada, a place called Iqaluit. So the indigenous people in Canada are typically divided into three distinct groups. There's the natives, there's the Métis, who were sort of a blended culture that emerged early on, a combination of European and native, but it created a truly distinct culture. And then the Inuit, who are in the far north. And so he'll be going to Iqaluit for a special encounter with the Inuit peoples as well. And so I won't be going with him up there, though. I'll be heading back to my diocese.
And speaking of Quebec and Quebec City, can you just tell people what the significance is of that place for Christianity in North America, how key that really was?
Yeah, Quebec City, I mean, this is, you know, one of the earliest European settlements in North America. The Bishop of Quebec, the Diocese of Quebec, stretched from here all the way down to New Orleans.
That's amazing.
If it wasn't Spanish and if it wasn't the 13 colonies, then it was part of New France. And so that's why so many places have French names, even in the United States. St. Louis is actually, from my point of view, St. Louis. You know, New Orleans here, we don't call it that. We call it Nouvelle Orléans. It still has that sense of being part of the history that traces its origins here. And, you know, Quebec was really a place of commerce and a gateway for evangelization and for exploration and so on. So it has there are deep spiritual roots here. But also there is a basilica just outside of Quebec in a place called Saint-Anne-de-Beaupré, which receives hundreds of thousands of visitors every year. And the Feast of Saint-Anne is celebrated there. Saint-Anne is in the grandmother of Jesus.
Yeah.
And the spirituality of Saint-Anne, the devotion to Saint-Anne, has historically been very strong among Indigenous peoples in our country. The grandmother as a source of wisdom, that image has, you know, really spoken to people. There's a pilgrimage every year at the Basilica on the Feast of St. Anne for the Indigenous people. I presided it a number of years ago. I was very honored to do that. And so it's very apropos that the Pope visited a lake named after St. Anne around Edmonton, and now he's visiting a basilica named after St. Anne here in Quebec. The nice thing also about doing this part of his papal visit here in Quebec is Canada is certainly a bilingual English-French country, and so it gives him a chance to address the entire nation. And it shows that it's not just about the Pope, it's about all of us getting together and walking together in a journey of reconciliation. And so it's got to bring us all, English, French, everybody.
Yeah, I love that. Love that. And that's one of the great bridges that, and even St. John Paul II talked about that when he came to Canada in 1984. He talked about things in the First Nations cultures that can be a great bridge to Christianity, concern for creation, the family, the role of the family. And yes, the feast of the grandparents of Jesus, the parents of the Blessed Virgin Mary. We just celebrated that on July the 26th. We made a big deal about that here on Relevant Radio as well. And that's great. Those are all great links and great, great background information for us to know. And hey, speaking of Twitter, speaking of that digital continent, where can people find you on social media, Bishop Dowd?
Well, if they look up my name, Thomas Dowd, D-O-W-D, then they can find me pretty quickly. My profile pic is just my face. Or my niece, who is a bit of an artist, she drew a cartoon version.
Yeah.
So I also have profiles where I use a little cartoon version. You got to have a fun side, you know?
I see that on your Twitter. Your Twitter image is that one, I think.
Yeah. So people are most welcome. And my old website, thomasdowd.ca, all one word, thomasdowd.ca. So Thomas Dowd is all one word. Memory serves, I think I have a page there with social media links, so people could use that as well if they wished.
You do. I actually saw it the other day. It's still there, and you got some great blog posts there. Lots of good food for thought there. Well,
I've been becoming a diocesan bishop slowed down the blogging, let me tell you, but I hope to be able to get back into it, because it is my first love when it comes to media. But I do appreciate the power of the other mediums, media as well, various social media, and it's just a way to connect with people.
Yeah, absolutely.
I find it's really worthwhile. I thank you for bringing me onto this more old school form radio, but still very powerful and very relevant.
No pun intended. And we still got not only radio, of course, but we put out all these episodes as podcasts as well. And so they're out there wherever you find podcasts. And we think it's really important to do that. And we thank you for being kind of a pioneer in Catholic media. And I really want to thank you for your time, Bishop Thomas Dowd, Bishop of Sault Ste. Marie, Ontario. He's traveling with Pope Francis on this journey, walking together for reconciliation. So thank you so much for taking the time out of your busy schedule, Bishop, and I hope you get a good rest tonight, and God bless you going
forward.
My
pleasure. Thank you so much, and God bless to all your listeners.
Thank you very much, Bishop. Appreciate you. And that was Bishop Thomas Dowd. Wow. So great to have that conversation. We have to take a quick break right now on the Cale Clark Show, but we'll be right back with your phone calls. If you want to react to that conversation, anything the bishop said, call in right now, 888-914-9149. We'll be right back on Relevant Radio. No strangers to love. All right. I got to put Karaoke Kale in the box immediately before things get out of control. Had to Rickroll you guys. 35 years ago today, that song was released. Never Gonna Give You Up by Rick Astley. 1987. Wow. Now usually that this song is used exclusively for Rickrolling now, but there's a great article on Wikipedia, by the way, on Rickrolling. They've done it. I'm not going to read it to you, but there's a lot of stuff there. But you got to see the video. The video for this one, it's got well over a billion views, and it features some of the most outstanding dad dancing you'll ever see from Rick Astley. I mean, it's truly, truly outstanding. I'm going to use some of these moves next time I go to a wedding. But hey, I'm never going to give you up. I say this to all the listeners here of the Cale Clark Show. I'm never going to give you up. I hope you never give up the Cale Clark Show. Make it a habit every single day. My thanks to Bishop Thomas Dowd for joining me earlier in the program. What a great conversation that was. And so, Producer Jim, you're actually from St. Louis, not St. Louis. So just so you know.
That works for me.
Okay, sounds good. Oh, by the way, I do apologize on how the Blue Jays have been beating up on your poor Cardinals over the last couple of days, but they did give a nice ovation to Albert Pujols.
That's good.
You saw that last night. That was
yes. That was
very heartwarming.
And it was.
He does seem like a genuinely great guy. I was watching the ESPYs, and he got an award there, obviously, and some of the stuff that he's doing with impoverished people back home in the Dominican Republic. Got to give him props. He really does seem like a wonderful human person. And I believe he has a child who suffers from Down syndrome as well. So he's got a foundation for that too. And anyways, one of the greats on and off the field. But I did have to laugh in the last night's game. There was a clip that was surfacing on the internet on Twitter after George Springer of the Blue Jays hit a grand slam to put the Jays up. I think it was 8-2 at the time. The St. Louis broadcast crew were silent for over 53 seconds before they said another word, which is an eternity.
That's probably to keep Jim Edmonds from saying something he shouldn't say.
Yeah, maybe they just had his mic off the whole time. Maybe he was saying quite a few things, a few choice words. At any rate, let's see what words you have to say. We're going to go to the phones right now. Let's go to Maria, who's calling from Long Beach, California. Hi, Maria.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I was very thrilled to hear Bishop Dowd speak about the sinners in the church as well as the saints.
Yeah.
And as a lifetime Catholic, I have been more than shocked to see how little even the Catholic community understands the nature of sinfulness. I mean, it's a biblical concept, and yeah. I often remind individuals of this reality that out of 12 apostles that God himself chose to be his representatives on earth, 11 betrayed him and only one remained faithful, and he was at the cross. So it's a reality. Sin is a reality that is a human reality, and it does not, it reflects on the church. But it is not the fault of the church. And it seems to me that the excuse is to make the Catholic Church responsible for its sinners. It's a human condition that Christ paid the cross with his life on the cross so that we could receive mercy. So I just don't tolerate too well the criticism of the church as an institution. Because the guilt falls on the individual themselves who are committing the sin, and I'm so glad that the church takes the position of facing that there are individuals and have been individuals who were obviously not aligned with perfection. Let me just say that.
Yeah, and that's not to excuse them, but Maria, that's a really good point. And even going back to the 12, of course, Judas was one of the 12, which is kind of mind-blowing to think about, but that's the reality. And so there have always been sinners in the church from the beginning. Some of them even got into the hierarchy, and that's always been the case. Or look at the history of the Borgia popes and all the corruption. And I mean, if the church could survive that, my goodness. I think it was Cardinal Newman, when he went to Rome for the first time, one of the greatest converts in the history of the church, he was shocked, and he said, man, this has to be of God. It actually led him to the opposite conclusion. He didn't say, this can't be of God because of all the sin. He said, if this wasn't of God, it wouldn't exist anymore, because only a divinely founded institution could make it through all this, all the human folly and sinfulness. And also a good point, Maria, that really the all of the apostles, except for one, essentially abandoned Christ at his moment of need. And of course, St. John did stay with Our Lady at the foot of the cross. But and there really wasn't too much difference in a sense between what Peter did and what Judas did. They both betrayed him in different ways, but and they both, in a strange way, you could say they repented. Judas was sorry, but he didn't repent to God. He gave the money back. He threw it at the feet of the high priest, but then he ended his own life, which showed that he had given into despair and didn't think that God maybe could forgive him. But Peter, and whether or not this really happened or not, there's a great scene in the movie The Passion of the Christ, obviously a lot of artistic license here, but where Peter, you know, after Jesus looks at him after the betrayal, he goes to Our Lady and says, you know, Mother, I betrayed him. And so he turned back, and he was restored. And the same can happen for anyone who turns from their sin. And so that was a great point, Maria, to bring that up. Absolutely. And I do think you're right. There is a bit of a loss of the sense of sin in general. Peter Kraft, I've used this before, he has this line where he says, hey, when you look at how long the communion lines are and how short the confessional lines are, we're either living in the greatest generation of saints in the history of the church, or maybe we're just deluding ourselves a little bit about where we're at with God in general. And I do think there is a loss of the sense of sin. It's not talked about very much. I know several local priests who refuse to even touch on the subject of sin in homilies, thinking it'll turn people off. I'm not so sure that's the case. I think it does need to be talked about. But the trick is, though, to not just beat people over the head with it. And a lot of quote-unquote fire and brimstone preaching that I've heard throughout the years in Catholic and Protestant circles has attempted to do just that. So there has to be, of course, the element of God's mercy as well, of grace mixed in as well. The good news of the gospel, I think, has to be in every homily, in every sermon somehow. You got to get to the good news. So the quote-unquote beat up the folks messages are not good if you're just going to leave it there. That's for sure. But I do think there's more than a place for it. And I think, obviously, you don't want to scare people. Maybe you do. I mean, the reality of eternal separation from God, the reality of hell, that's not talked about enough. And Our Lady of Fatima, we just dealt with this recently on the program, the vision of hell that the children received. They said they would have died on the spot, the visionaries of Fatima, if Our Lady hadn't promised them already that they were going to go to heaven. Now, Francisco needed to pray some more rosaries, but they were going to make it there. And so this is a reality. If it is real, it's something that needs to be talked about. And fear of hell is not the best motivation for coming to faith. Pure love of God, of course, is ideal. Just like, you know, earlier in the program, Bishop Dowd mentioned as an example a case of what happens if there's an adulterous relationship that takes place. Well, the best motivation for not doing that is loving your wife, obviously, and the best motivation for not sinning is pure love of God. You don't want to hurt the beloved. But I'll tell you this, for me, that's what brought me back to faith when I was in university. It's just the reality of, wow, I'm in trouble here without God's grace, because sin is real. there has to be, because God is a God of justice, there has to be punishment for sin. So your choices are either let Christ take that punishment, or you got to pay the price yourself. And I know which choice I'm going to make, and you need to do it. You need to repent, of course, and turn away from it for sure. And as Bishop Dowd talked about that as well during you know, that's one of the conditions of absolution when you go to confession, that you're going to make your best effort not to fall into that again. And will you at times? Maybe. And then you just keep going back. You get more sacramental grace and more strength for the battle going forward. But it's a starting point. It's not perfection in the love of God, but it is a starting point, and it's very real. Jesus warned about this for a reason. So thanks very much for your call, Maria, and for listening to the program. Okay, I'm getting a message here that an off-air caller was wondering if I could do a show on ham radios sometime. Bishop Dowd mentioned ham radios. It was kind of a precursor to the internet. I know nothing about ham radios. I am a ham on the radio, as you know, from time to time. But that's about it. That's about it. I don't know whether we can, maybe we can broadcast on two ham radios from Relevant Radio. I have no idea. If you're listening on a ham radio, let me know. That's for sure. But wow, what a great conversation today with Bishop Dowd. Thanks for listening today to the Cale Clark Show. I will be back in 23 hours, less than that actually, because of course the Faith Explained show will take place at 12:30 Central tomorrow, right after the Daily Mass. But don't forget, you can get all of our shows, the Faith Explained, the Cale Clark Show, any show that we have on the docket, you can get it at relevantradio.com or through the app, wherever you get your podcasts. Check it out. Timory is up next, followed by Father Rocky with the Rosary Across America. God bless you. Jim produced. Thomas took your calls. Take it away, Michaela.
Thank you for listening to my daddy.